My name is Alexander Erilaupma, and you are listening to Fotografiska Tallinn podcast. Every Friday and Saturday, our restaurant holds Nada Dinners, which focus on zero waste principles in pursuit of excellent food. To bring this idea to life, our head chef Peter Pihel invites great chefs from all around the world to cook with him and together offer inspiring and memorable culinary experiences. My guest today is one of those chefs, Albert Frank Sunje, the founder of Nolla, a zero-waste restaurant in Helsinki. We talk about how a warm-hearted boy from sunny Catalonia ended up opening a restaurant in the cold, dark country of Finland, how the unnecessary waste we create in our homes and restaurants is making us sick, and what we can do about it. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you do as well.
Albert Frank Sunje.
Yeah, but you can just... Albert.
I just say Albert Frank. Yeah. But which one is your mother's and which one is your father's?
Frank is my my Frank is my dad's, and Sunje is my mother's. And like, kind of like traditionally or by law, you always put like your dad's first and your mother's second. Mm-hmm. But it's like changing slowly that you have like the freedom to choose all other parents, because I mean you cannot choose shit when you are like a baby, but your parents they can choose if which order they want to give it.
Yeah,
because I guess there is families that they just die at some point, like the surname. So I guess that at least you have the freedom to just try to keep it like moving. It.
What do your parents do?
My dad is a pharmacist. It's a second generation like pharmacist. My grandpa was, so he just followed. My mom is a nurse, physiotherapist, and at the moment it's working in a elder house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like a nursing over there.
And you were born in a small space, like a small city or a small town?
It's a small village, like maybe 80 kilometers from Barcelona. It's like 6,000 people. This is like a really, really small village. It's a mining town, basically, like especially like on the 60s, we got like a lot of immigration from south of Spain, and just because of like the mining.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a really rich, it's a really rich area for like a potassium. It's like KCL, and there is a company that is like extracting it for like basically use it for fertilizers.
Yeah. Is it still going strong, or has the town died off?
It's dying off in a way. Because it's not as rich as it was. I mean, it's been like extracting for like many years, but well, how it should move naturally, even probably is not as profitable for the company, just to reinvest on like kind of like cleaning the mess that they did and basically like refining like the waste that they produced during like the rich mining time on, mm-hmm. on the town.
What made you move to Finland?
I came for work. I was living abroad already by then. I was working in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking. I was living in a really small island, and I was getting crazy because you got like this, I never heard before. I actually learned it after, but you get this like island sickness.
Yeah.
That you just need to go out because you're just like spending all the time in this like really tiny area. And I was looking for a job, and they offered me a job in Chedominik, in the Two Stars in Helsinki, to take care of the pastry. I've been pastry all my like a cooking life. And I came for a year just to see a little bit what's happening in Finland and how people work here. For me, coming from a small town close to Barcelona, is as exotic to have like a wide beach with palm trees that have like this like a snow like
yeah.
feel like landscape. So it has this like a really, it was really exotic. So I really wanted to see what's happening here.
And how did you find the people? Because Finnish people and even Estonian people are very, very different from Spanish people.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to say that I was lucky enough that I met really warm people really fast. And all these things that people tell me, oh, when you move to Finland, people is so cold, they are so distant, they are like, it will take you such a long time to really make like you know, like get to know them. It was not at all like that.
Mm.
It was really easy to get into like a group of like really like a big hearted, like mm-hmm. a lovely people that really, it felt like home, like really fast.
Okay.
Really fast. And I was as well like this from one side, and then like in the restaurant we were maybe 12 guys working on the kitchen, and I think 10 of us we were for abroad, so we got like really tied together. So it had like this like getting into the country, but as well with all the group of immigrants that we were like spending 17 hours every day working in the restaurant.
Yeah. And do you still go back to Spain often during the year, or how much of the time do you actually spend in Finland?
Like I mean almost all the time.
Yeah.
I love to travel a lot. Not probably the most like sustainable practice that I have, but it's something that it drives me crazy if I cannot get out of the place where I live like once in a while. But I don't go much to Barcelona. I go like once every year and a half, more or less. So I visit fairly little for how close it is.
What was the first time for you when you realized that the way that the restaurants were run, that there was something wrong there?
It was a trash room, actually. It was throwing like a trash or like a waste after a service. And I remember like it's really, I couldn't fit the trash bag on the container, and I was really pissed off because I was on the shit, like doing my prep and finishing the day. And you couldn't just fit it. And I was like, how is possible doing like 40 people in the restaurant once a day? They are like emptied twice a week. I cannot fit a bag of trash in this massive container. And I think that was one probably of the things that really triggered this, how is it possible? Many things happen, like I think that drive me to this like environmental like consciousness, but I remember that as one of the first things that really trigger like this I mean, what the hell are we doing, or what are we doing wrong in here?
Was that in Finland as well, or was that?
Yeah, it was in Finland. Yeah, I think it's complicated. Like at the beginning of your like cooking career, you are so focused just on what you are cooking, and you want to really perfect like your craft.
Yeah,
you are like a, you know, like a horse that they have this like thing in the eyes, and you don't have like a really wide vision of what's happening in the restaurant.
You just want to
focus
improve.
On
yeah.
like food. I want to perfect what I'm doing. It's like all you care about. But I think that after working years, even though this feeling it stays with you, but you start like widening up like your kind of view. You feel a little bit more comfortable on what you are doing. You probably have like a little bit of more like relax, and then it's when you start like realizing kind of like all these other things that's happening around in a restaurant.
How is that situation back home where you came from? Like what was the way like your grandparents or your parents cooked, or the restaurants in your town or village?
It's kind of hard for me to say, because I actually studied biology, so I never thought that I would be a cook until like really late. I just like discovered late, not late in life, but because I'm 33, but like late on my short life, that I would actually like to cook. And just like cooking with my mom home, but I don't really recall it as I really recall it as there is nothing that can be thrown away. That was something that it was really strict back home. There was, if we couldn't finish like the meal that it was prepared, it was stored and it was reused the next day to do on the new meal, or just warm it up and eat it. There was like really, really little like food going to waste back home. traditionally as well, like our way of cooking down south. I don't know if it's the same here because I haven't spent that much time, but it's a lot of what people now call nose to tail, like a lot of offals, a lot of like these not noble parts that people doesn't want to use now. We are like in this society where you want to eat filet and entrecote, but no one wants to eat the liver and the kidneys. And back home, we eat a lot of that. So obviously, I guess that it kind of influences you somehow, and it sticks in your memory, like all that you live and all that you unconsciously learn, on the way how you work, like many years after.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that people don't think of like organs as valuable, mm-hmm. because actually organs have the most amount of vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, many people don't know that. But the multivitamin was based off of liver. Yeah. Because you know, in indigenous societies, when they hunt an animal and mm-hmm. they catch it, they take the liver raw and just share it and eat it straight away. And because liver has the highest density mm-hmm. of vitamins and minerals, when they during the world war, mm-hmm. they started to think, how can we get minerals to soldiers yeah. who have issues? And they thought like, okay, we have liver, could we get this to them? No, yeah. it goes off. Can we make something that would like replicate the liver basically? Okay. And that's how they came up with multivitamins.
Okay, it's cool because I ate a lot of liver as a kid. So I assume that on the back of the head of someone might be like something that helps you to grow up. Because yeah, it's something that we eat a lot back home, for example. Like,
yeah.
Like a liver is, yeah, like really with some like poached onions and mashed potato.
Yeah, and also when you look at the... Maybe this is too technical, but I love this stuff.
Yeah.
When you look at the vitamin contents of like lean meat, it doesn't have all of them, and also with the amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
So if you in the natural way, you would eat nose to tail, right? You would mm-hmm. eat like a broth made out of the bones. You would eat some organs, and you would have some lean meat and some fat,
so
and you balance everything out. But right now, people just eat the lean meat,
mm-hmm.
and you only have one types of vitamins and minerals, and so you get imbalance of them, and it's again something that people just have no idea about. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah,
but
I didn't know that.
Do you feel like there is something that that most restaurants could do or implement very easily to waste less?
I always say the same, and it's something that I think that we share with the guys back to the restaurant. And I think the easiest practice is like just to take out your trash bins from the kitchen one day. Just move them away. And then you will start realizing like a lot of things. Because when you don't have the commodity of just like hiding everything that you don't want to use, or you don't want to think how to use or how to improve inside the trash bin, it's when you start to thinking like how to do it. And I think it's like, or do it home, it's the same. Like just one day, get your trash bin and take it away. And like try to do exactly the same that you've been doing before, but without the trash bin. And I think that's like, it's a really like healthy exercise to understand everything that we could do.
Where do you think that a shift happened in our society that people just started to think like, oh, I can just throw stuff away, you know? Because it used to be very recently, 100 years ago, nobody wasted anything.
Well, I guess it become when like in this like abandoned like society, like in this society that we don't really need to suffer to get like our
well-being, food.
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah, you know,
just
like
to be comfortable.
We live in a really we live like in a really comfortable society where like the majority of people live like really well without needing to suffering much about what I will eat today. Do I have a house where to live?
Do you feel like in your restaurant Nolla, when people come there, do most people care about the fact that you don't waste anything, or do most people just want good food?
It's really divided. Like, I would lie if I say that, like being like a zero waste restaurant didn't probably help us at the beginning to attract like a certain public, but I think as well that there is people that just come, and especially people that come again, it's just because I guess we are doing something right. Like, and they are happy with the service, they are happy with the food, they are happy with the drinks and the atmosphere, like in general, of the restaurant.
And did you learn anything in biology that you can still apply or that has influenced you?
Yeah, especially like when I started cooking in pastry, I think the methodicity, the organization that it was like, especially that I remember when I was doing like a lab, kind of like a lessons, like when you start like putting things in like a proof and you need to be like really exact on what you weigh and what you are doing and following really like the steps if you want to have like something at the end that it's good. Yes, like that probably helped a lot on, or not help, but again, like one of these things that you learn that stay with you.
It gave you like a way of...
yeah, probably like of organization. Yeah. And yeah. I think pastry is like really much, it's really much the same, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, but 1.1 + 1 is not 2 anymore.
Yeah.
So you need to be like really precise on what you are doing. And yeah, there is like a lot of parallelisms between both this like a lab job and like a... being a pastry, absolutely.
And was there a certain type of biology that you studied? And did you finish the course or did you?
I didn't finish. I didn't finish. I studied 3 years. I didn't finish because I started feeling that probably that was not the thing that was making me more happy. And I decided to go one summer in between before I needed to start, like to try this restaurant to see what happened. And I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And that was my first, like my kind of like getting into the restaurant world. But I was really interested on sea, like by marine biology. Like that was probably like the branch that I would have taken. I love the sea. It's something that I don't know. It's a special.
I love the sea. I've been living next to the sea my entire life. Are you worried about like all the plastics that we get in the sea?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's ridiculous the way that we are treating the seas. And not only the plastics, like the overfishing, like the pollution from industries, like not respecting, I don't know how it's here, but like in Spain, like the laws of urbanism and like massifying like the buildings like next to the coast, like destroying like all the sea ecosystems. I mean, it's ridiculous. How are we mistreating the sea? Like something as rich as the sea.
Yeah.
It's really sad. But I think that sometimes humans are like a little bit selfish.
Yeah. In Estonia, we're supposed to have a law, or we do have a law that says that you're not allowed to build anything like 150 meters from mm-hmm. the seaside, I think. But then you see, you go next to the seaside and you see like massive buildings coming up there. Yeah. So people always find a way to...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit like the same in Spain. I think they made like this, like a coast law, where it was like really strict and really regulated. But I mean,
we all know. Yeah, and I know that sadly in the Baltic Sea, we're not that good with fishing either. Like, it's...
I think it's like a really like extended practice. I don't think that it's, you can like really point here or there. I think like it's something that everyone is not doing proper. So
yeah, and you said you studied biology. I'm not sure if you've heard about this or are familiar with this, but since we just had a big exhibition about plastic downstairs by Mandy Barker, and I've been talking about that for months, and so I've been telling thousands of people that because of all the microplastics that we get, and the microplastics have xenoestrogens in them, which are compounds that are like the female sex hormone, but they mm-hmm. come from plastics and from some food items.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so much affected by them that we can see that every generation has had a smaller Y chromosome than the one mm-hmm. before.
Okay.
So the Y chromosome has been getting smaller with every single generation. And when you look at the male testosterone levels, you also see that they've gone down with every single generation. And for like more than the last 30 years, every year it has gone down by 1%.
Oh, wow.
So, and when you look at how much people have problems with infertility, able to get children, every year it's going up, it's like, and up and up. And we don't even connect it with stuff like throwing plastic into the oceans and then eating it back with every single fish that we eat.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I was actually reading like an article the other day about the big business, the big global business about people and fertility.
Mm.
It was, yeah. But I had no idea how it connects one with the other.
That's crazy. But it's very interesting because we're very big animals. Mm-hmm. Like for us, it's going to take a long time to have an effect.
Yeah.
But we've seen within the lifetime of one fish, a male fish becoming a female fish.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a male frog becoming a female frog and being able to give actually eggs to give birth to like new baby frogs.
Wow.
Within one lifetime. So it's completely crazy because they're so small, they're surrounded by all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's going to just take a longer time. But
crazy.
It's a very, like, a horrible story, and it's very terrifying to think about
it
that.
It is, actually. That's crazy.
Yeah. What about, do you get all your fish and animals and the plants? Do you try to get everything as locally as possible?
Yeah.
And sorry. What's the variety? Because I always think that like in Estonia and Finland we don't have anything. Like it's nothing grows here. But
it's Finland at least has like a really good produce. I mean, like, starting from the beginning, we use except salt, wine, coffee, and tea, and really little bit amount of olive oil that Carlos' mom, one of my partners, is making back home, and she brings to us when she comes for visiting. Everything else is local. And by local, I mean now Finnish, even though we are like rethinking a little bit like this local kind of world, because I think that sometimes this locality is like really like thought on like artificial borders that we created more than thinking like about the kilometer kind of like diameter from where you are. So I would call local like some fish coming from Inari Lake in Finland that is 1,200 kilometers up north in Lapland, but I wouldn't call local something coming from Tallinn that is 80 kilometers from home.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit like, yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Because I don't think so.
Yeah.
So now we are like rethinking a little bit like, and we are creating kind of like a diameter where the restaurant is. But all our vegetables are coming mostly like the ones that are further is like maybe 45 kilometers from the restaurant. Really good farmers, like lovely people. We have like really close relationship with them. Really good, really, really good produce, I think. During summer, really abundant. During winter, it's tougher. Of course, like, I mean, well, this year there is no snow, but like when the weather was like really cold and the fields are full of snow and everything is like frozen, like there is not much that you can grow. So then it's a time for like cellar roots. And that's what it is. So it's like it's limited. But on the other hand, I think it's in our hand or in our side to just be more creative and try to make all we can from this produce that we have at the moment. And I think that consumers as well should understand that and should be more like conscious about it, that especially people that likes to go out and eat like in a responsible restaurants or like restaurants that has like some focus in sustainability. Like if you go eat out on January and the menu doesn't have like strawberries or peace, it's because a reason.
Yeah.
It's not just because we just enjoy cooking with roots, but it's because at this time of the year, that's what we have.
Yeah, also when we were talking about biology before, and when you think about it, for tens of thousands of years, during the summertime, humans have always been able to eat a lot of fruit, eat a lot of vegetables, eat a lot of anything. And during the winter time, for tens of thousands of years, everything that we've had is like salted meat and some grains that we've left over from the summer.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, I think it makes sense that we have times within our bodies. You have a time for growth and then you have a time for like repair and regrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, for the past like 50 or 60 years, we've been able to always get everything within our bodies. We can always just grow. And when you see the entire population, almost everybody's fat, almost everybody's sick, and we still want more. And I think it makes so much sense to, again, go back to eating the way that your body has been used to for tens of thousands of years.
Absolutely. Like, I remember, like, as a kid, like, being home and hearing my parents talking about the Mediterranean diet. And I was like, what the hell are they talking about? But then it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you eat meat once a day, twice a week, I think it was the portion, and fish, I think it was like around three times a week, and then the main base of your like diet is like, it's plant-based, and that's how it was, and then you just eat whatever the land or like the sea gives to you, and that's it. But again, I think it comes to this like abundance society where there is a lot of everything and we just don't really like think much on what we are like eating. It's just more like, I think that we prioritize what tastes good more than what makes us feel good. I guess that's how you reach to these limits of people not being as healthy as they were before.
Can you tell me about the concept of greenwashing?
It's really complicated, but I guess it's just someone like saying that they do something that they don't. I think it's like lying. I mean, or just like creating a fake facade on your company or on your business or whatever. Just making believe the consumer that you are responsible while you are not.
Yeah, I know with some cow farmers or cattle farmers, to say that their cows are grass-fed, they take grass and they make this, they press them into these pellets, which are not actually very nutritious, and then just feed them that, which is very easy and cheap to do, and they can say, oh, it's grass-fed. Yeah. But actually it's, you know, and is, would that be like one example of trying to show yourself?
Yeah, of course.
It's
like, I guess, like the misusing like the terms as well. Like, I mean, I don't know. And then on the other hand, like just really not caring about like sustainable or whatever, like doing it more like to enrich like yourself and your business more than actually thinking on like the consequences or like the actions that you are saying that you are taking when you are not.
And maybe it's a too extreme example, but when you take like company like Nestle, you know, the biggest food producer in the world, and they you see like a Kit Kat chocolate and it says like Rainforest Alliance certified and sustainably produced, and actually they have like 2 million child slaves, 5, 6, 7 years old, who have been stolen from their country, sold to slavery, who are picking this chocolate every day and picking their like coffee beans, and they say, oh, it's so sustainable. Yeah, really, that's very sustainable.
Yeah, there is a lot of things that doesn't work in this world.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And, but you feel, well, I feel certainly that it's something that is changing in our society.
Absolutely, yeah.
And why do you think like the change happened? Because for so long time, we were just going one way. And now, in the last 5 to 10, 15 years, it's been slowly changing.
I don't know, actually. I guess maybe because there is more education regarding the subject. I mean, I think that on the last years, it's been like more accessible and maybe more easy to understand what's the problem that we have. More like easy or more like palpable, like something that you can really grasp and you can really feel. Before, I think it was like something like really technical. We have a hole on the ozone, like, and what the hell does this mean? But when you start seeing that there is like the poles are melting, or like the level of the sea is increasing, or there is much more storms than there was before, or like, I don't know, desertization or et cetera, et cetera. I think that is something that it's much more like something that you can touch,
mm-hmm.
not just something that you need to imagine that is so abstract, how much CO2 goes. I mean, for someone that really is not like, it's kind of complicated, I can imagine, like to understand what's going on. So I think this accessibility, like to information and making it probably like a little bit more easy, it's what it's making like this shift on the society. And I think as well, it's, I don't know, I sense that societies with probably like less problems are maybe the societies that are more like turning to this sustainability, and it's probably because their like needs are covered, so then
they have more time to think about
like further problems, that is not just like where to live, how to feed themselves, and survival.
And you know what I just found out was very interesting to me, at least, like 70-80% of all the world's population, they grow their own food, they raise their own animals, and they basically live in a very sustainable way.
Mm.
And the very small percentage that is very rich,
fucking over.
But yeah, exactly, doing all everything, all the factory farming, all the monocrops that like fill entire like massive fields, doing all of that. Just the, like
it's crazy.
10-20% of people.
It's crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
It is like it's insane.
Is there a difference in the Finnish and Spanish society regarding?
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think that the Spanish society, like a lot of them, has not covered like the most like crucial needs. Spain got like a big crash years ago, and I think the country is still not like fully recovered. I mean, we still can see every day. People getting kicked out from their homes just because they are not able to pay their loans to the banks that are making like millions and millions of profit every day, or like a lot of like the corruption that there is. I mean, and I think that probably you think more on that than on like being sustainable. But when you live in a place like Finland that everything works in a way,
yeah.
Or at least I have the feeling coming from where I come from, it's much easier again, like to think on, okay, what's the problems, like more like global problems that we have, and
yeah.
just try to tackle them. But yeah, it's really, really different. Yeah, the thought, like the thought of like sustainability or like how to fix certain things.
Would you feel like it would be more difficult to make a restaurant like yours, to open a restaurant like yours in Barcelona, for example?
I'm not sure, because I think in certain things it would be easier, because there is much more produce available through the year, and I think that there is a lot of like people like farming around, so I don't see it like to make the restaurant itself more complicated. I can see more complicated that maybe people wouldn't necessarily like understand the concept or like the global idea of what we are trying to achieve as easy as people does in Finland.
Do you feel like there is somebody in that field to look up to? Are there role models? Or is this field so new that it's still like...
It's really new, but there
you
is
just have to try
that,
everything out, and you don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work and so
no,
on.
No, it's really new, but there is people that has been doing like a great work on that. I mean, Silo in UK, now relocated in London, but I think they've been like for many years doing such a great job on that. I think Amas has like a really interesting approach on sustainability, like in Copenhagen. Rele, or the Rele family, for me at least, is someone to look up. I think they do like a great job, like produce wise. I think it's amazing what they do. There is like a lot of people already that they've been working like many, many years on that, doing like a great job on that, not necessarily doing it on the way that we do, but at least in like certain like parallelisms of like what people is doing here.
For me, it's so interesting to see, like, when you say that you're zero waste, when you say that you're sustainable, when you say you try to like help to reserve the nature or whatever, when you say that, then everybody wants to accuse you. Oh, you're not doing it perfectly. You're not so good. Yeah. But see what you do here. See what. But what about this thing? Yeah.
Yes, we had that last week. We had a group of, I think it was 20 people eating at the restaurant, or like 20 something, and it was a big company. They were having like a speech, and one guy just like a stand to give like his speech to the company, and he started doing exactly that, like, oh, because you have a compost that it's bullshit because you still throw things, so you are not like a zero waste because you still have waste that you throw inside the compost. Oh, this is absolutely, it's like, I don't know, it's like really weird, this mentality of like, if someone is trying to do something, fuck, just help.
Yeah.
Like, have like positive thoughts, you know, like, guys, good job. There is still things, of course, like to improve, many of them, and we are conscious about it. But good job, and let me know whatever I can help. Chapeau. But if you come and it's just like, oh, but I saw that you use like a, I don't know, a can of tomato to do stuff food. Fuck, like,
yeah,
it's crazy. Like, people is like really, like, it's really easy to accuse and to try to find like shit of like other people more than just like saying good job and hopefully it will keep going.
I think if we would do that to like our children, see what you did there. But it shows so much more about the people doing that.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
About you,
but it's harder when you have like hard days working like many hours, trying to do your best, not achieving like everything that you would like to achieve, things not going like as perfect as you would like to. It already creates kind of like this feeling inside of you of like, fuck, I'm not doing things as they should. And then when someone just like, bah, it really brings you down. It makes you think, like, it makes any sense that I do what I'm doing? I mean, I'm putting so much effort, and still people like,
yeah,
really doesn't.
And nobody is accusing the people who are not trying to do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But what
Carlos always, he always says that everyone wants the change, but no one wants to change.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really easy to just like point to you are doing but not doing good,
yeah,
more than people that are just sitting lazy and not doing or even trying anything.
But yeah.
That's
but what are the things where you struggle, or are there things that you see that even if you were able to do this perfectly, the society is set up in a way that some things is just, it's impossible not to waste, and it's impossible to avoid some type of...
Like, I think the biggest struggle that we have is like... how you say, like detergents, like chemicals,
yeah,
like washing products.
Because
we cannot find first someone that produced them like in a proper way. It's like full of chemicals. So it would be great to have like a strong, like biodegradable, like natural products, like to clean our kitchens. Because I mean, you need to keep your kitchen like really clean, because you care of your customer and you don't want to hurt them. So I think, at least from my opinion, I prefer to not be perfect on my zero waste, but make sure that my customers are safe. But it would be great if some brand would come like with a really strong, and I hope that there is some brands already, and it's just that I didn't find them. But that is like one of the biggest like problems that we're having at the moment, like the packaging of like the detergents and like the detergents themselves that they, yeah, that we use. There is problems always like working, like I think like a really difficult thing is like to connect, to create like a network with people that think likewise, people that, if you would have a problem because you are creating more glass that you can reuse, to rethink what you can do with that. For us, like, recycling is like really the last thing that one should do, because it's something that is not in our hands. So I don't really know what happened when I put like a glass bottle inside a container. They told me that, but someone told me as well the other side, so I don't really know, and it makes me a little bit like anxious, not knowing what's going to happen. And there is a lot of like energy involved to destroy something to make exactly the same thing again. That doesn't make much sense to me either, because you already have it, so just wash it. But anyway, but yeah, like finding like the people to work with, it's being really a struggle. And I guess as well, because it's like something like fairly new, so maybe like slowly people will start, like other companies, like working on this. And then certain like product, we are a small restaurant, and then there is products that, and I put the example of like the oil, for example, that are coming normally from like bigger companies that they produce like big amounts, and it's really complicated to make them understand and make them work in a way that makes sense for you. You need, it's a lot of effort and a lot of explaining and a lot of like convincing and a lot of like asking and almost like how you call it, like, yeah, like really like putting yourself on your knees saying, please just send me something, you know. It's really, it's tough. It's tough. But when it happens, it's like a really, like a comforting kind of feeling and like huge victory on what we are trying to do. I put oil because it was one of the toughest at the beginning to find them, like in a reusable container.
Who are the people that you started the restaurant with? I heard you say that one of them is Portuguese and one of them is Serbian.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that happen?
It's like, I remember like an article they wrote about us that it's like a starting of a bad joke.
That's exactly the same yes. thing that I
one yeah. Portuguese, one Serbian, one Spanish going to a restaurant. Yeah, so we just met working in different restaurants in how you call it, in Helsinki. I came to Helsinki. I happened to meet Carlos. He came to Helsinki like I think 2 weeks before me. And we happened to start almost at the same time on in Che Dominic working. We were working not side by side, but us to us, because we were just back to back into different sections that we were working, and we spent a lot of hours together sharing the struggle. And we became like really close. Carlos is family. Che Dominic closed, and most of us relocate to Olo, another restaurant, and we met Luca. And Luca is like one of the most warm-hearted persons that I, more like caring that I ever met. So it was really easy to have good relation with him. Really, really easy. And yeah, after a few years, we all follow like our things, like they keep working in different restaurants in Helsinki. I left traveling for a year. And when I came back, we just kind of found each other again. And we decided like to open the restaurant. Partners, but family. And
it has worked out so far? Because it's so, like, I've worked so much with my friends, and sometimes it can be, you know, it's...
Well, we are three southerners.
Yeah.
With big temper.
Yeah.
And obviously, really stubborn.
Yeah.
And sometimes, obviously, like, it comes there. Absolutely. I would lie if I would say that I never fight with Luca or Carlos. Absolutely. But it lasts really little. It's when you fight with your brother... You know that you get really pissed off and you want to kill him, but it's not like fairly easy.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit like the relationship that I would say that I have with Luca and Carlos. We are like just like, like family, like definitely.
If you could take one thing that you could teach everyone, what would it be? It can be about sustainability. It can be about cooking.
Wow,
it can be about anything else.
That's a tough question. Probably respect. I think I'm not sure if I could teach it, because I probably is still like something that everyone should work on. But I think respect is something like really undervalued, that everyone should teach and learn more. I think everything would work much better with a lot of respect. Not just respect to other people, but as well respect to the environment, respect to the work that other people is doing, like kind of respecting more. I think it's really undervalued, and it should be definitely like teach more than.
Is there anything that you can think of that your parents or grandparents taught you that you still think like, oh, that was wise?
Yeah, probably humbleness. I think it's
which is almost the same as respect.
Yeah,
it's very close.
I think it's like it's a huge value. It's like I think like being humble, it's super important in this world when you want to move forward. Because if you believe that you know everything, you will never go anywhere. So humbleness is one of the values that I really take from home, like probably the most precious one.
Do you read a lot of books? Or do you have anything that you definitely would like to recommend to people?
I haven't read a book that is not a cooking book in a while, because it's a little bit like obsessive kind of like work, the one that I'm doing. That's a tough one. I read like a really cool book when I was traveling in Japan, that it was it's from Ruth Rachel. I don't remember like the exact name of the book, but it's a book that explains when she started being like a restaurant critic for the New York Times. And it's a really interesting approach to the restaurant world and how people works, and it's like beautifully written. Oh, I like. Yeah, that is a book that I think it's like everyone should read. It's a Dan Barber book. He's the chef of the Blue Hill Storm Barns. He's like crazy. He's one of the persons to look up when you are doing some sustainable work, like in restaurants. He did like great job, like, you know, huge job in a, it was called Wasted. It was like some pop-ups. The first one was in New York. The second was in London. And he was using like only like waste products to cook and creating like a menu, like inviting a lot of chefs, like putting really out there, like, and it's like really good. I don't remember the name of the book. But if you look for Dan Barber, and it's like it's about agriculture and like different like approach to the soil, and it's really really interesting book. That's a book that actually everyone should read.
Yeah, about the soils. Do you check that the people that you get your produce from that they don't use like too harsh pesticides, like Roundup or stuff like that?
We use that they don't use pesticides. We check that they don't use pesticides.
They don't use anything. Yeah. I'm sure you know about the effects that stuff like Roundup has had on on the soil, and we know that most of the honeybees, they think this is the biggest cause of the death of honeybees.
Yeah.
And sadly, I'm not sure if in Finland it's still legal to sell pesticides containing glyphosate.
I'm not 100%
sure. Yeah, because in Estonia they still do, but I know many people, many countries have banned it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's again, it's so horrible when you know the entire story how they, like, because with so many pesticides, that they say that it's safe, but it's only safe because it has been used for so short amount of time that they don't know that it's dangerous yet, so they can say, oh, it's nobody has proven that it's not safe, which is just, it's so crazy.
Yeah, no, we have like a really like a tight relationship with our farmers. We know all of them. We visited almost all of them, I would say. Maybe not the last ones that we started working with because we didn't have much time, but all the others, we visited them, so we want to see like the way that they work. And I think it's like a really healthy exercise to do. Just like go there, see how they work, see where they work, the respect that they have or not on the produce that they are growing, and then just, I mean, decide if you want to work with them or not. But I think it's really really important. Besides certifications, this is like just like a plus if someone is certified, like has some certificates or not. But I think you like need to believe with who you are working.
And oftentimes the certifications, they cost a lot of money, so somebody can, yeah, it's, yeah, again, it's a,
yeah, or maybe like not everyone just wants to be like in the certification or not, because they don't believe in like everything that is happening on this certification. So like to get the certification, or it's not necessarily like that everyone should believe on this kind of thing. So then, I mean, I guess you are free or not to take part of it or not. So, but yeah, it's really important to know who you are working. Just because I wouldn't like to eat something that poisons me. So I think that I have the responsibility to not serving that to someone that comes to eat to my home. Because then I would be like a complete hypocrite.
Do you have big ambitions in the future? Like in 5 years, 10 years, do you have wild dreams that you don't want to talk about?
Yeah, I have the wild dream of keeping my restaurant open.
Because that's tough, right? Because restaurants
really
is one of the toughest businesses to keep open.
Absolutely.
And do you feel like there's a difference? Is it more difficult being sustainable than it would? Because even if it's a not non-sustainable restaurant, it's still a very hard business to keep open, right?
I don't think it should make difference. Because a sustainable, or like a, I don't know, like a restaurant that like works in a way that we are working, at the end the aim is to serve good food and good drinks and make like a good time for people. So I don't think that it should be more or less complicated to keep open. I think that if you have like a good product and people enjoys it, you will have customers that they will come to it, and that will get you the doors open of your restaurant like every day. I think that you just need to take like really good care of the guests that are coming every night. I think that's what you should aim for. But I don't think that it differs if you are like a sustainable restaurant or not. It's just like the work that you are doing.
And is it actually more expensive having a sustainable restaurant trying to be zero waste?
I would say no. We should ask that to Carlos. He's the Excel guy. I'm just like,
so maybe he doesn't tell you.
Yes, exactly. But he haven't complained, so I guess that everything is going good. No, I would say no. I would say that it's more or less on the same. We can keep our food cost on what we believe that it's fair for everyone. We can pay our loans, which is reopened, so we have a lot of them. We can pay our workers, we can pay our bills. And still at the end of the month, we're going to still can put aside like a little bit of something just in case happen. We are not like just screwed. So it's a feasible and it's a profitable business. I mean, I think it's like, it's more like thinking you want to become like extremely rich or not. Like, I mean, would you like to serve like produce that is like extremely shit and extremely cheap to people, pricing it like really high and making like a lot of profit out of it by lying the people that is coming to it? I don't want to. So I don't think that it's, yeah, it's feasible. It works.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people in the world doing that already.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can,
yeah,
and you can go and find out if they're happy or not.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's like a really personal decision that I think that everyone takes or not. So, yeah.
What do you think would be, again, the one thing that people themselves could do to easily not waste as much? Like in your everyday life,
yeah.
Like
just probably go to buy after eating. Like first you eat and then you go to buy food.
Oh,
because we have like a big problem of like over buying and over filling our fridges, and we throw away a lot of food just because we don't have like a proper organization of the food that we are taking home, and I think it's because you are out from work, you are starving, and you just want to eat everything. So you just fill your baskets and you take it home, and then you're like, what am I going to do with that thing that I have in my fridge that I don't even wanted to buy, but I was so hungry that I just wanted to put in the basket?
That's a good one.
So I think that, yeah, just eat and then go to buy. Buy little and probably more often don't like cover the stuff. It's not easy to do because, I mean, everyone is really busy. But I think that as well we should like prioritize like our the things that we are doing. And I think the nutrition, it should be like one of our first things on priority list because it's what keep us alive. So I think we should put more time on that. And then as well, I check a little bit like where you are going to buy, you know, support businesses that they have like organic produce or that at least like produce that respects like the way that it's grown and like the environment. Don't overeat probably like meat and fish and make sure that you buy like the little quantity that it will bring what you need. And from the producer that is growing it, like how it should be grown. Yeah, like, but I think that the overbuying is probably one of the things that it needs to be fixed.
Can you tell me what's in your fridge right now?
In my fridge right now, it's all vegan food, even though I'm not vegan, but I live with a vegan. So if I'm not really wrong, when I left, there was 3 bottles of wine. One bottle of...
So white, like I presume?
Yeah, white and a skin contact, okay. Yeah. There was a bottle of apple juice. There was some tomatoes, 1 cucumber, some salad. I think on the freezer I had some bread that I took from the restaurant that was left last week. Some berries. There was some yogurt as well. Some shiratsu. It's never too full because I don't spend that much time home, either my girlfriend. So we keep it fairly empty.
Yeah.
Fairly empty. A lot of sweets probably. There was some like a chocolate puddings or something like that. I have a big sweet tooth. So the house always has some sweets. But it's always fairly empty, just for that reason. Because at some point you realize that I have it always full, but I don't spend time home. What I'm doing.
Yeah. Right now in my fridge I have some frozen liver, frozen Brussels sprouts, some rendered beef fat, and some pork fat that I've already used for cooking, but I put it in a jar to reuse it later, and some garlic. That's it. So I have 5 things right now in there.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, it's
But it's but
you don't live with a vegan.
No, I don't. I don't live with a vegan for sure. Is there anything else you wanna tell people? Anything that they can spend some time to think about? Anything that they can watch? Anything that they can read? Or anything other than just trying to be more humble and respectful?
No, I think that it's like, I think we should think more about like our daily actions, like be more conscious on what we are doing, just not like take everything for granted, be more responsible and taking action on the damage that we are causing. I think that it should be over this time that we just take everything for granted. We use all the resources without thinking, actually, what are we doing? I think we should think more, rethink more. How is this word in English? Like, we shouldn't be comfortable of like just keep following. We should kind of like reconsider everything that we are doing and just not thinking that it's like that because it's like that.
Yeah, to unlearn some things that we have been taught.
Exactly. We always like say that one of the most complicated things that we have in a restaurant is like the denormalize everything that it's normal, but it makes no sense. Like this normalization of waste that we have in our society nowadays, I think it's crazy. Like that we are just producing things to be thrown away. And that's normal. But to reconsider that and try to reuse or upcycle is something that is not normal, is the exception. And to me, it's like, it's crazy to think about it. So this, like, I think that is like a huge work on this, like, denormalizing the production of waste. I think it's like crazy. And it just comes by thinking and rethinking and taking action and a lot of education. But hopefully, little by little, it will get out from the norm and become something more not normal. But
beautiful. I know you have a dinner waiting for you. So one last question I'm going to ask you. What's the first thing you do after waking up? And what's the first, the last thing you do before going to bed?
The first thing that I do when I wake up is taking out my 25 set alarms from my phone because I'm always really afraid that I will not wake up. So if I need to wake up at 8:30, I have 8:30, 8:35, 8:40, 8:45, 8:50, 8:50, maybe like 20 of them. So that's the first thing that I do, like every morning. The last thing that I do before going to sleep is brushing my teeth. And most of the times, put a little piece of chocolate in my mouth and have sweet dreams.
Beautiful. Well, Albert, thank you very much for coming here.
Thanks
Beautiful to talk to you.
It was a pleasure.
Wonderful.
Thank you.